Well, hey there, freaks. It's your boy Marty here to introduce this week's sponsor, the Cash App. You know all about them already. Cash App has been the number one finance app in the App Store for the last 2 years. They were the first P2P payments app to let you freaks buy and sell Bitcoin. Then they were the first P2P payments app to let you withdraw Bitcoin to your own private keys. And now they're the first P2P payments app to allow you to withdraw, to deposit Bitcoin on the app and then do with it what you may. I participated in Cash App Wednesday last week and sent my hashtag. They sent me $5 worth of Bitcoin and it was really cool. On top of this, they have their Boost program, which allows you to go to merchants like Chick-fil-A, Whole Foods, Taco Bell. I go to Whole Foods and use it almost every day. And then I'll go walk to the coffee shop down the street, get a little coffee, and use it a second time that day to save a dollar. The Boost program is incredible. So make sure if you download the app, you get the Boost card as well. And if you download the app, make sure you use the promo code STACKINGSATS, because that'll allow you to get $5 for free. And then we will give $5 to a charity of our choice. We're whittling that down right now. The charity will be decided on soon, but let's help a good cause raise some money. Download the Cash App today. Use the promo code STACKINGSATS and enjoy this episode with the Bull Bitcoin team. Matt and I sat down with BTC Sessions and Francis Paulette, and we had an incredible conversation talking about the old days. We actually talked a lot about the SegWit 2X wars, and it's a lot of history. A lot of history in this episode. It was fun to finally sit down with Francis and Benny, and we had a really good time. Hope you freaks enjoy. What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. Second recording of the day. Sitting down with two fine gentlemen, and Matt O'Dell's with us again.
So fucking pumped. Happy to be here, guys.
We're sitting down with Francis Paulette and BTC Sessions from Bull Bitcoin. Very excited for this. It's a long time coming. Welcome to the pod, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love the show, by the way. I listen religiously.
Thank you. Like I was telling you earlier, your YouTube videos from years past, I was a big fan of. You're a good advocate.
No shit, actually?
Yeah, you were traveling the world shilling Bitcoin.
You actually watched? Oh, shit. That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
It blows my mind whenever somebody's like, oh, yeah, you were like on a beach somewhere talking about hardware wallets.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
No, it's crazy. So what I wanted to start with is we had Eric Spano on the podcast months ago, and he was the original founder of MyBills and handed it off to you guys. So I want to hear about the Montreal Bitcoin scene back in the day, how you came to meet Eric and how you came to acquire MyBills.
Yeah, the Montreal Bitcoin scene, those years were, the years with Eric and the Bitcoin MSC were 2013, 2014. They were insane. Like, when I think back of like what we were doing, we were way too early for doing what we were doing. So the Bitcoin Embassy was a nonprofit organization that was founded by three early Bitcoin adopters and Bitcoin entrepreneurs. And it was a four-story building downtown Montreal. And we kind of started it as a co-working space, as a, I guess, meetup space mostly. We did some, kind of coin center public advocacy and stuff like that. And Eric came on board. He was helping us with the finances because he was studying in accounting. But he came up with this great business idea. So he came on board as kind of one of the resident founders and entrepreneurs. And I don't know how he came up with the idea for Bills exactly. I was working at the Bitcoin Embassy, so I was just helping him out on his project. And it did extremely well. And Bills was really awesome because if someone's well, what can you spend with Bitcoin? And I was just well, first of all, you can just use a prepaid credit card and you just don't have a bank account. You can spend fiat everywhere. Just pay it off with Bills. You can pay any of the telcos with Bills, with Bitcoin. So that was a great soundbite to every journalist. So he was running Bills as a one-man operation. He did pretty much everything himself. He designed the UX. He really created the concept, the brand, and the website. And then, not unfortunately, but after a while, he just got a really good opportunity to move to the U.S. and to work in consulting. And I was kind of crushed, because I'd been pumping Bills as part of, my job at the Bitcoin Embassy. I was promoting the Bitcoin companies in the space that were residents there. I was pumping Bills. I was helping him out on it. And it was we can't let that go. But it's such a difficult thing to operate a Bitcoin bill payment business. It's such a difficult Not a lot of people were able, like, how can you sell that company to someone else when you built it entirely from the ground up and it's all dependent on like what you imagined? So luckily, I mean, I had some experience with it, so we took it over. And at the same time, we were also running like a Bitcoin cash to Bitcoin counter. So the Bitcoin Embassy had a legit like trading desk where people would come in, sit down, like, here's a bunch of cash. We're like, all right, take our phones out, you know, pay them, you know, sell them Bitcoin on the spot, put the money in the safe. So we were kind of doing a bit of local Bitcoin initially, and then it just scaled. So we created this trading desk, and it was great because in bills, people pay their bills with Bitcoin, and at the counter, people would buy Bitcoin. So we would get the Bitcoins from bills and sell it to the people at the counter, get the cash, and then use that cash to pay the bills. So this idea of the two-sided merger of a payment processor on one end where people are paying Bitcoin and an OTC desk where people are buying those Bitcoins made it so we avoided the exchanges. We didn't have to leave a lot of money on the exchanges for deposits. We weren't paying as much exchange fees. So it just turned out to be like a perfect match, right? The OTC desk on one side and the bill payment on the other side.
You didn't have to touch Quadriga at all?
We did. We didn't have to touch Quadriga, but we stopped using them, I think like two and a half years ago. Being in Bitcoin since like 2013, we all use Quadriga, right? Quadriga is like, it was like the Bitstamp of Canada, right? Or the Kraken of Canada. Everybody uses that. It was pretty obvious to a lot of the Bitcoin community that it was sketchy, right? And I think a lot of the people that left their money on there, they kind of knew that they're kind of taking out like a gamble that it wasn't going to be them, that, you know, when the exit scam happens. Mm-hmm. But so we tried to avoid the exchanges as possible. And eventually, I took over bills. I hired a software engineering team to have everything in-house. So bills was built by a contracting company before. Now everything's in-house. So if you want to, like, you know, add a crazy feature, I just, you know, my devs are sitting next to me. I just asked them. We merged bills and my company that acquired the bills from Eric with Bitcoin Brains from mm-hmm. Calgary, Alberta. And they were running kind of the same operation as we were at the Bitcoin Embassy. So they had a physical space. They had like meetups. People were coming in to buy miners and, you know, ask questions and stuff like that. So we merged the two companies to create like a pan-Canadian bigger company. We didn't want to scale with VC money. We didn't want to scale like internationally at all. So we had both the same mindset that let's just serve the Canadian, you know, market extremely well. And just focus on one cryptocurrency, which is Bitcoin, obviously, and not do anything else. Just serve the Canadians extremely well with Bitcoin, and forget about everything else. And that turned out pretty well.
Yeah, it seems like what you guys are building with Bull Bitcoin is you're building on momentum of the last 5 years. So like you're it seems like everything's coming together for you guys in particular. And so what was
totally.
What was the journey like for combining all this into one umbrella company that is Bull Bitcoin?
Well, yeah, great question. So when we first, around like 2014, I mean, we had these Skype groups that were like today's Telegram groups, like of early Bitcoin OGs. Like, well, back then we were just like Bitcoiners. And we had a Canadian Bitcoin like Skype channel. And they were in there, and we kind of knew what they were doing. That was like 2014. And then we just started to talk. And then we started to do some trades between each other, right? Some OTC trades for liquidity. And then they kind of just became our mentors because they had been doing that for like 2 years before us or a year and a half before us. So we were just kind of like pen pals, I guess. Like just we were doing trades and talking shit, you know, making fun of shit coins, you know, reviewing like GPUs and like minor ASICs and stuff like that. So we just became friends. And eventually we just started to trade exclusively with each other like every single day. At some point, I decided to quit doing blockchain consulting. I did blockchain consulting for a year and a half, and that was like horrible. Like,
yeah, what was that like?
That was like your soul dying. Like, that was every worst thing you can imagine about a job. Like,
who were you consulting for?
I was consulting. I created a subsidiary of Grant Thornton in Quebec, and we were consulting for like energy companies, miners, some tax stuff, like just typical Big Five consulting. But like we were extremely Bitcoin only and trying to push that into the mainstream. And I didn't see I didn't see me having the patience to like wait 15 years to convince the mainstream. And then I became much more interested, and I talked to like Pierre Richard and Bitstein and Save Dean. And through talking to them, I was like, fuck the mainstream. I don't have to sell Bitcoin. It sells itself. Okay. And I should be focused on just one thing. Like we were thinking, oh, we're going to be the Trojan horse of Bitcoin in the institution. So okay, we're going to start with open timestamps and like ECDSA signatures and PGP PKIs and like try to make them think that they're doing blockchain, but they're actually just doing like Bitcoin. And we really had like a plan to do that. And like, you know, sneak Bitcoin in through the back door. So, oh, now you are using Bitcoin. You can't say you're not. But we decided that I was just grew tired of that, of all the bullshit. Like I'm allergic to bullshit. And I was having like severe allergic reactions every single day. So I stopped doing that. And then, yeah, that's how I met Dave. So we just became super good friends. And I quit that. I spent like a year, a month on vacation. And then, when Jack Dorsey came back from his like meditation, he like went full Bitcoin maximalist. I had a
beautiful
kind of, yeah. I had a similar kind of experience where I was like just a month on the beach and doing nothing. And I was just like, I spent too much time thinking. I don't know. And I just decided to go full Bitcoin maximalist and call Dave and said, yeah, this is like the time. And we both felt like this was the time to go Bitcoin only and to like specifically make a Bitcoin only brand and to make that like our thing. I mean, our main thing, which is Bitcoin only, cypherpunk, just the highest standards. And I think that was like really a good timing. And I'm seeing a lot of other companies that are kind of going in the same direction. And I see this just spontaneous convergence of like what we should be focusing on, the priorities, basically. Everybody's priorities are getting straight. And I'm pretty happy with that.
What priorities in particular do you think are becoming aligned?
When we first, so I got basically Francis and Bitcoin Brains, they poached me from my old job. So I was lucky enough to be already working full time, like in the crypto space, as I think a lot of people do initially, even though they're like, I'm into Bitcoin, but I'll put up with this so I can do this full time. You know, that's seems to be a lot of people's trajectory. And so like, I was working in the space, but the job became like, hey, we're going to add every coin as like the business model that you see basically everywhere that's not a Bitcoin only company. And we're just going to do the trading fees and we'll just add whatever, doesn't matter. Like how many coins can we get? And so I got a little disillusioned there. And so when I remember having the conversation with, I was at work. And so I went for a 3-hour walk because I was talking to Francis, and that's how conversations with Francis go. And you just basically dumped your brain of like everything you wanted to accomplish to me. And I remember there's a few key points where we both came to this like mutual, I think the wording was unapologetically Bitcoin maximalist, and we just started shooting the shit and saying like, I think we were talking about the term maximalist and how instead of rejecting that term, people just you know took it on. We're like, great, that's what we're called. Cool, we'll go with that. And we've seen a lot of that. And so I think our with Bull Bitcoin, it was just, whatever people call us, we'll just take it. And like we've seen a lot of that with like our Bull Bitcoin kind of marketing push. We're like,
how about those advertisements, those video ads?
Yeah, people, there's like a it's very segmented. It's either one or the other. People are either like, that shit was hilarious, or you guys are cancer. And so like I got a lot of like, I can't believe you guys spent money like calling out shit coins and making a professional video about it. And I was like, guys, we had the money to spare because we didn't buy any shit coins.
the funny thing is they still use our services. They still do convert to Bitcoin and use us to cash out in fiat. So, you know, jokes on them. They have to pay, you know, exchange fees somewhere else.
The dirty little secret of every shitcoiner is that they have a huge bag of Bitcoin.
Oh, they all do. Yeah, oh, they all totally do. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It is the reserve asset of the space for a reason.
Yeah. And you know, the priority, I think if Dave was here, he would say, this is our only chance at getting a decentralized shedding point around sound money. ever. Like, if we have to do this now, right? And for me, it's very much the same. I'm a huge sound money Austrian economics advocate. I was an economics researcher before I joined Bitcoin. I was working at the Montreal Economic Institute, which is a very notoriously Austrian economics focused think tank. I worked at the Institute of Economic Affairs, which is the same, and the Fraser Institute in Canada, which is also an Austrian economics focused think tank. And I was trying to kind of exactly that strategy of incremental change, of like moving the Overton window over time by like producing research showing how the free market can help and that kind of stuff, and liberties. And it was going nowhere. Like, and then, you know, Bitcoin for us is political. It's a force of disruption. And let me contrast that, for example, with other Bitcoin companies that started out maybe 2013, 2014, where for them, Bitcoin was a market. You know, it was a new innovation that they can get funding for to subsidize their entrepreneur lifestyle. They didn't have a mission to eradicate the fucking Bank of International Settlement, right? So when I'm talking about priority.
All I can think about is Coinbase when you're talking like that.
maybe, probably. And BitPay. Coinbase and BitPay. And Blockchain Info. These three are the worst. So the priority for us is that's what it is. So how do we get there? Our motto is building the Bitcoin standard. So that's the software and financial infrastructure. So the on-ramp, off-ramp, and one of the hugest priorities of Bull Bitcoin is Cyphernode. Like, people do not realize how much of our time we spend on Cyphernode. Like, an insane amount of time. Me personally, I probably spend more time in Cyphernode than the rest of Bull Bitcoin, because and CoinJoin and that kind of stuff, because like, our goal as a company is to accumulate more Bitcoins. Like, we don't have a target for an exit. We don't have like a transaction volume. Well, we do projection, but really what we're looking for is, can we accumulate a huge stash of Bitcoins while it's still humanly possible, like under a huge like amount of dollars? And also, we are doing this for ourselves. We want to make Bitcoin the king. We want to make Bitcoin, we want to see our purchasing power do 100x over the next 10 years. So when we're talking about priorities, I mean, this is the priority for us.
Stack as many sats as possible.
That is the number one priority for us.
I mean, I think, you kind of touched on this. The memes are extremely important, right? All these, the merch you guys have, the ads, those videos, right? Like, they're extremely powerful. Like, you can release research paper after research paper or whatever, but like, what really gets through to people are those memes.
It's, so I came to Francis last year as I joined the company, and I was like, listen, I got this idea for like a really fucking stupid like out there video, and I basically said like, I want to do a world vision ad for wrecked shitcoiners. And I was like, and so like, those of you that haven't seen it, basically it's like a bunch of dudes on the street that look like down and out,
haggard.
and haggard, and then it zooms in and they're all like, they've all got like their signs that would typically be like, spare any change, except for it's like, send ETH, y'all got any more of them dApps? Like, and then it's like testimonials of them, like, you know, and the guys in the video, like, they're all like pro Bitcoin, but they're like, yeah, we can step into that realm for a little bit. And so we took aim at like the biggest three that we kind of saw through 2017 that were getting pumped. So like Bcash is in there, Ripple and Ethereum. And we just kind of, I don't know. We just, the whole point was to take the absolute ludicrous pumps and irrationality of 2017 and comedically look at the fallout from that. And so we just, yeah, I don't know, we just went with it. We filmed for like half a day with a really wicked filmographer, videographer in Calgary, Numero Films. That guy's, Morgan's a boss, and he just turned it into this like hilarious looking thing, and we put it out there, and half the people were laughing and half the people were super mad.
Right, well, and that comes back to like the shirt you're wearing, toxic Bitcoin maximalist, and I think those videos personify Bull Bitcoin, but Francis, you more in particular, because you are well known as an outspoken maximalist. And
yes,
what's it like taking shit from people who you probably innately believe are sort of misguided in this space, and being principled and not backing down when people are calling you out for calling out shitcoins?
I don't really feel much, actually. I don't. I give less than zero fucks. There's like someone asked me earlier, is like a Twitter follower, and she told me, how do you know you're right? Like, you seem like you always think that you're right and that everyone else is wrong. It's because genuinely, I mean, I've been researching this stuff for 10 years. And every time I was wrong, I changed my mind. And through the process of elimination, I haven't found a single new argument over the last like 3 years. You know, I have some minor things, but nothing has changed my world view since like possibly reading Nassim Taleb's Skin in the Game, right? That was like the last time I had like an epiphany of, oh, wow, this is... I focus on what's more important is what I call the remnant after reading really amazing short story Isaiah's Job, which is about essentially the central idea is that I want to focus on getting people more radical. I want to focus on getting people more committed, put more resources in. I want the highest quality people to get as crazy for Bitcoin as I am, and the way that you do that is by not diluting the message. And these are people that do not identify with the mainstream. And if they see you diluting your message, and really, if I see myself diluting the message, I'm going to lose interest in what I'm doing. I don't even see people giving me shit on Twitter. Twitter for me is, and I say this, I'm not even joking. Like Twitter, I'm still surprised that people read my tweets. And I know I see the likes and everything, and like I see the retweets and stuff, but when people come up to me in person, they're like, I love your tweets, man. Or like, oh, that tweet you did? I'm like, man, this is just like my own diary. And I got like, you know, I'm a very ADD type of person. I can't sit down and write a blog for my thoughts. I need that immediate, it comes in my head, I tweet it out. And you know, this also comes back to the memes. Like I studied working as a like PR person in politics, doing economic research. I know, and I did my master's thesis on this, on narrative framing, right? So I became kind of an expert before Bitcoin on narrative framing. And memes are the way that we win people's hearts and minds because they're the most kind of condensed way to share information in a way where we know what we're thinking. It's a way to get people to think about a set of ideas in kind of a box really quickly so that you can digest a lot of really complex information that's like bombarding you into something your brain can comprehend and like make sense of. So like a meme is that, right? It's a condensed like shortcut for your brain. You know, putting the memes out there solidifies the narrative that we're trying to push. It's focus on Bitcoin, be cypherpunk, and you know, protect privacy and focus on the core values. And a lot of people also, they, you know, thinking about it as a business, as a way of doing business. I mean, a lot of my thinking has been actually inspired by a Montreal company called Dime. I don't know if you guys know Dime. It's a skateboarding company. And my friend started that. We were early on the meme boards, like when we were super young, like 14, you know, YTMND, we were doing memes. And they started to do memes in skateboarding and do very, very short videos, doing exactly what we're doing in the Bitcoin space, but in skateboarding. And what they did is they transformed their business into a cause that people who had no financial interest in were like you guys, seriously. Like, I know you guys like us. I mean, I hear the comments. A lot of people, they're like, go bull Bitcoin, you know? And instead of having to, raise tons of money for marketing and that kind of stuff, we can just put out our memes out there. And you know, people are going to take up our memes, take up our branding, or take up our ideas and root for us as a cause, acting as of like a decentralized marketing force. People say like, oh, I was talking to a VC yesterday and like being Bitcoin only and strictly Bitcoin only, and they're like, I asked them, why don't you go Bitcoin only? And they say, oh, because we like the money. We think we don't like money either. Like allowing to being Bitcoin only means that we have time to develop CoinJoin. We have time to develop Cyphernode and Lightning and like the on-ramps and off-ramps and just focus on our core business. And like this makes our business much more likely to exist in 10 years than all the ones that are scrambling, fighting against each other for the next thing that grabs, you know, the VC's attention. So it is not it's not like selfless to be Bitcoin only. Not only is it our mission, but this is our competitive edge financially against the other companies in the long term.
Yeah, focus is key, right? And
totally.
That's and reputation is key too. So people are a lot of people blew their reputations in 2017, 2018, and especially during those mania phases, like trying to stick Bitcoin only is imperative for your long term rep in this game.
Yeah, yeah. The Twitter is a Bitcoin Twitter and Bitcoin Journal is brutal. Like a lot of people, they just there's a lot of pressure in being an influencer. But you know, I think that the way that I hope I didn't blow it, but I might blow it. I don't know. I hope to retire before I blow it. Actually, that would be great. that would be really good.
I think you're on a good path right now. But let's jump on the CypherNode, because I believe the first time CypherNode popped in my head, as you gave the presentation at Riga last year.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. So CypherNode is an open source software project, which is like sponsored and supported by Bull Bitcoin. But there's other key contributors that are not part of Bull Bitcoin. Well, actually, that's not true, because we just hired him last week. The idea for CypherNode was that when we started out doing bills, we were using third-party Bitcoin APIs. So we were specifically using Blockchain Info for a while, and then we were using BlockCypher, stuff like the BitPay API. When we started to build a new platform, we hired regular web developers, and it's not easy to like run your own Bitcoin Core full node in an enterprise setting when you can just pay like BlockCypher $70 a month and like, or BitGo, for example. We were using BitGo as a hot wallet because my web developers, I don't want them. They don't want to manage a Bitcoin Core server for a business. I mean, that's very hard and very dangerous. And you need to really kind of know Bitcoin to interface with Bitcoin Core. And if you're building a web app, you don't have time for that. But when the USF happened, we're like, oh shit, like we don't have a choice but to run Bitcoin Core for all our operations exclusively, because we're going on this minority software project which has not been adopted by those third-party APIs. So we managed to miraculously do that at the last minute using a software project called Insight and BitCore by BitPay. But after that, they refused to integrate SegWit in it, and it was just garbage. So we had to build our own. So and also, when Lightning Network came out, we wanted to be the first business to accept it. My thoughts on that have changed a little bit. I'd rather not rush that yet. But anyway, the concept was we didn't know which instance we were going to use or which one was going to come out on top. So we wanted to build a software project that would be like a meta layer above Bitcoin Core, BTCD, LND, Eclair, so that we can kind of just switch from one to another and do some abstraction on top of that. So CypherNode is basically a method of deploying a network of virtual machines that are connected together in an encrypted network that is your own network that you're controlling. So like you spawn this daemon, this network that's running in the cloud, and it includes stuff like Bitcoin Core, C Lightning, the Open Timestamp client, PGP, some business logic like a timer, a web API, a webhook, all sorts of utilities that you need to run apps, and that is exposed through an API, and it's also a way of deploying web applications in tandem with Bitcoin, so that you create an encrypted network which is protecting a subnetwork of web apps and a subnetwork of Bitcoin stuff. So it's kind of like, it's almost evolving more like an AWS type of thing, where it's kind of like, but it's all self-hosted. So the concept of CypherNode is self-host your own Bitcoin API. Like, why would you pay for BlockCypher when we basically open sourced what BlockCypher does? It's your own Bitcoin Explorer. It's your own Bitcoin hot wallet. And where we're heading is adding all sorts of cool Bitcoin side projects in this stuff, so that it's also a Bitcoin node launcher as well, right? So it's a way to deploy and launch a bunch of nodes in a very secure way. So secure, in fact, like, I mean, Bull Bitcoin is in CypherNode. Bull Bitcoin is a component, a business logic component as part of a CypherNode network. So, I mean, it's used in production and it definitely does work. And the concept is that we wanted the other startups in the space to be able to deploy a self-hosted backend without going the easy route, which is going through these web APIs, and specifically the younger generation of people that are, you know, they don't really care about Bitcoin, Ethereum, or EOS, or whatever. They just want to work in the blockchain space. They're just looking for some cool tech. And Ethereum had all these like tools and dev tools and dev kits that are super like easy to integrate. Like if you're at a weekend hackathon, for example, Ethereum people, I was at a few hackathons and Ethereum people would show up and they'd be like, this is like four software libraries that you can deploy and you'll get like an Ethereum app in like a day. Right, so they get them while they're young, seriously. And then if you're doing a thing like a startup thing, you will continue on the path of whatever you started on rather than switching to like Bitcoin, which is super difficult. You've already got investment of time in it. So our idea was just that, like, make it super easy to build and deploy Bitcoin apps and abstract away the difficulty of stuff like automated coin join for payment processing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it seems like it's very privacy conscious, and that's one thing that you guys have done most recently is you guys are wasabing, you're coin joining all the deposits.
Yeah, totally. So Cyphernode itself is the development philosophy is extreme lightweight and extreme privacy, and no decision made on behalf of the user, right? So total sovereignty. And in Bull Bitcoin, like, we still do KYC, coin join and Bitcoin privacy has nothing to do with KYC. But we want to protect our users, like, and part of our philosophy is skin in the game. And I got family members that are using my company. I'm using my company. The staff is using the company. Friends are using the company. Other Bitcoin influencers are using a company. And like, how can I accept having like garbage companies like what's the Neutrino or other blockchain trackers,
Chainalysis,
send dust to our deposit addresses, try to reverse engineer how many users we have. They can try to reverse engineer if their users are also users of their platform. There's a lot of corporate espionage going on the blockchain. Like it's hardcore. So I can't accept that. Like, that's bullshit, right? So we figured out a way to coin join all the incoming coins. And the way that we do it is kind of cool because we, and actually we're working very closely with the Wasabi team. They're good friends of ours. And they've been extremely responsive to like our needs as a business. And like, I think we're each using each other as a test case for how the large scale coin join of every business is gonna kind of evolve towards. But we are using the Wasabi RPC API or using a Wasabi XPub. We can have the user deposits be Wasabi addresses and then coin join them directly without being aggregated before the coin join, which means that you cannot see if you're a user of Bills, who else is a user of Bills, because as soon as, like, from the deposit address, the next hop is out of a coin join. We can do all sorts of crazy stuff. We can do fake coin joins sometimes. We can put some decoys. We can merge outputs.
How would you do that?
A fake coin join is basically you splitting your UTXOs and making a coin join transaction with yourself without actually going through a public coordinator. But there's a few scripts to do that, like that automate doing that. But if you are, imagine a BTC Pay server where you put a different addresses for invoices and different people pay. Well, these are different people's UTXOs. So if you do a fake coin join with different people's UTXOs, well, it kind of becomes a real coin join, right? And there's also, like, people do not understand how insanely difficult it is to track coin join. Like, coin join actually works super well. I've done blockchain analysis in the past. I was hired by in a court case, and I did it as a hobby, stolen Bitcoins. I really like doing blockchain analysis, trying to figure out what's going on the blockchain. And like, I can't see shit past a coin join. And even worse, if we merge, for example, the user's outputs, which are people selling Bitcoins to us and paying bills, we merge them into another hot wallet, for example, for our own use or to sell to someone else. Someone's looking at the blockchain, he's seeing like seven inputs, for example, that are being merged into one input, or 30 inputs being merged into one input. And he thinks, it must have been one person which is cashing out of his coin join. So I'm going to look at the blockchain backwards and try to figure out who that person is by looking at the patterns of his UTXOs. But what they're actually going to be looking at is all sorts of different random people that have completely randomly different patterns of Bitcoin usage. And they're going to be like, whoa, what the fuck is this? Like, what is this person doing? He's on local Bitcoins in this country. So the level of plausible deniability that you get from CoinJoin is like, it destroys every single privacy coin that you can imagine. It really does truly work.
Two questions regarding Wasabi and coin joining. One, how are you guys managing like the fees with that? And then two, we talk about this a lot on Rabbit Hole Recap. Like, is there a threshold at which there's amount of Bitcoin that's being coin joined that affords us a degree of privacy across the whole network, do you think?
Yeah, so regarding the fees, the real answer is we haven't really kept track. It's not a business expense that I look at and I'm like I want to save on it. So the fees of CoinJoin they're decided by the coordinator first of all. So the Wasabi coordinator is going to decide the transaction fees because he creates and crafts the transaction. I think that they've increased them recently so that the CoinJoin speed is a little bit faster. Regarding the anonymity set fees, like the coordinator fees, I mean, that's a very reasonable business expense to have. In Wasabi, it's 0.003% per anonymity set. I'm not going to say how much anonymity set we use, but we only use 100. There's a certain level of anonymity set that is completely fine, and it's actually a good thing to alternate so that people can't try to figure out who you are if you have a weird like 17 of anonymity set, stuff like that. The transaction fees, they're just Bitcoin transaction fees, so it's not a huge issue. The thing with CoinJoin is the more liquidity comes in, it's kind of a compounding effect, right? So Wasabi is going much faster since we started to put our liquidity through it, and it's going fairly well. The level at which CoinJoin becomes, this is a very good question actually, because I was just thinking that, and I was talking with Citizen Bitcoin earlier on his podcast, I don't want there to be like a two-tier system of private users and non-private users. I think that's a really bad outcome for a few reasons. One, it makes it easier to track the non-private users. So it makes their situation worse, actually, if we are using CoinJoin in mass, because the chain analysis can focus their efforts on them, having completely abandoned the idea of tracking us. Or so I hope, unless I'm wrong. I don't really know the answer in percentage. I don't know how much. I haven't really kept track.
I think we're at like 5% right now.
That's very possible.
You guys were a nice boost. We need more actual like exchanges doing.
If you look at the amount of UTXOs holding 0.1 BTC or more, it's right. Like increased crazily.
Yeah. And all those BEC32 addresses with fixed amount of Bitcoins.
That's my question is, what are you doing with the change that's below the threshold? Like, how are you dealing with that?
I'm not the person who operates. I have a specific guy that operates right. The Wasabi wallet. I think that's a problem, actually. I think that's, I don't know exactly what the problem is. What you can do for those, I think you have to merge. You have to merge them.
You
right?
Merge them with an already coin join transaction, and you mix it again.
Exactly.
Or you use something like Samurai that has smaller pools, pool sizes.
What we can probably do is, I think send them out to another Wasabi wallet or merge some random coins, like send some random coins to that to add them up and merge them later. Or possibly even we can do a fake coin join actually. Mm-hmm. If you can fake coin join them into a larger input.
Right. It's more of a temporary yes. problem, because as liquidity increases, you'll be able to CoinJoin of all amounts.
So the future of CoinJoin is going to be a large market of different coordinators that are offering different trade-offs between anonymity set time and fees and stuff like that. So we're already seeing that, right? So for example, if we want to make a 200 Bitcoin CoinJoin, we can also go on the Joy Market order book and get absolutely wrecked with a really deep order of like 2% for the CoinJoin. But like, if you want to do that, there's the option. If you want to have a faster CoinJoin with Whirlpool or something like that, that's definitely possible. Even within Wasabi, I think that you can create a Wasabi compliant coordinator.
You can just fork out the coordinator with your own coordinator.
Sure. Yeah. Maybe is there going to be a high volume CoinJoin between startups like us? Maybe. Is there going to be a super pleb tiny CoinJoin in Wasabi? Maybe Wasabi will have large, medium, and small. If you're listening, that's actually not a bad idea.
I think they just need liquidity to increase, right? Like, there's plenty of people that want bigger amounts. There's plenty of people that want smaller amounts.
Yes.
So just keep them all in the same pool for now, because we don't have enough people using it yet.
Yeah, but I think they will specialize over time. Yeah.
And then, obviously, the emergence of Schnorr and all this stuff will make it even more incentivized to coin join and stuff like that.
Yes. So Schnorr is going to make it much cheaper. And I think it's not unlikely that someone's going to figure out a way to make like CoinJoin cheaper than regular Bitcoin transactions. Like, I would not be surprised if someone figured out a way for that to happen.
They say
they said,
once
they say P2EP will be right.
Like, oh yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Actually, that's something. That's one I want us to be the first ones to use that. So I'm actually thinking about that a lot. I've been thinking about that a lot. I talked to the Joint Market guys that have it. I think it's the only wallet that has. No, Samurai has it as well. Samurai has it as well. So there's PayJoin, I think they call it, in Joint Market, and in Samurai, I think it's called
Ricochet or
Kahoot's band or something.
Kahoot's,
no,
yeah.
It's not Ricochet.
No, no, yeah. I think it's Kahoot's.
Kahoot's,
it's
that makes more sense.
Something that Ricochet is having the transaction bounce off like a random number, like 7 times before it hits its final destination, yeah. Cycling through your own addresses. No, so that's great. So P2N point is kind of like a, it's a little bit like Lightning in the sense that, you know, I think both nodes need to be online. There's some kind of key exchange going on over there. But yeah, I think it's extremely promising. And that's a very, very private transaction type.
Yeah. I'm bullish on Bitcoin privacy as we head into the future. And that's like probably one of the biggest Achilles heels. Would you agree with that? Biggest Achilles heel of the network is privacy?
Yeah, I think that's not... I've never seen it like that because I mean, CoinJoin is like an old concept. So I could definitely see why people think that, right? Because the way that I see Bitcoin is so extensible at layers on top. And I guess a lot of imagination on what kind of crazy apps and crazy systems that are semi-centralized, completely decentralized are going to pop up on top and make it more anonymous at the top. But for example, I've always been more concerned about the auditability of the Bitcoin supply and the permissionless, trustless validation than I've been with the privacy, because it's kind of like privacy is something that you get at a higher layer, but it's also something more contextual. For example, when people say, they talk about Monero being more private, I'm like, are you a drug dealer? Have you used Monero to sell drugs? Or have you used Monero to move money out of a country? You're saying it's more private. Have you done it? Show me the whole cycle of what's going to happen. You're going to get the Monero. What do you do with the Monero? You're going to have to sell it. Where are you going to sell it? You're going to go on BISC. And then from BISC, what are you going to do? You're going to get Bitcoins, or you're going to go with some OTC guy. There's always going to be a trail. Monero is not used out of context. If it was a 100% Monero economy, for example, maybe it would be a very private coin. But to me, like, liquidity is one of the biggest drivers of privacy. Right. If you think about it, like, liquidity is just anonymity set, right? In Monero, like, sure, you have some fancy crypto, but your anonymity set is almost nil, and you can't liquidate it. And the less liquidity, the more likely you get, you know, into a honeypot, or you get de-anonymized, or something like that, or you get trapped.
You're looking at assailant number one on the Monero community shit list right here.
All right.
I have like a whole group of Monero trolls that love my tweets.
Oh my god. No, but Monero is great. But I mean, it's a cool idea. I think it's the least worst shitcoin. It is the least worst shitcoin as far as I'm concerned. But again, like, Monero's the privacy in Monero is very theoretical, I would say. And I think the people that are using Monero to actually hide their transactions are not thinking about the other aspects of privacy, and maybe that's even worse. But I mean, I'm happy that Monero existed because it did obviously put pressure on people to work out CoinJoin into Bitcoin. Because if you want to, have the one coin, I mean, you need to have, you know, the main competing feature. And I think that with CoinJoin, we have that. And I think with stuff like state chains, for example, Lightning, obviously, and Liquid. I don't think there's a demand for smart contracts at all. I really don't think so, actually. Smart contracts, like Turing complete smart contracts, like the Ethereum smart contracts. So I mean, RSK, I don't really care that they exist. But as far as I'm concerned, like, all the features that are missing in Bitcoin on paper, you know, for the normies to compare coins, we are getting them at a pretty good pace.
Yeah, I would agree as well. And so I want to shift this to, like, you guys are building Bull Bitcoin. You're pretty radical, right? There's some big implications if Bitcoin does become successful. Like, what's it like being this radical, this sort of like abrupt about your Bitcoin love, and you're basically building a company that's coming at the state and their power to issue money and stuff like that. You ever have your head on a swivel, like walking around? Are you worried about anything?
From my perspective, I think this kind of an attitude in Bitcoin is necessary to kind of shift the what is normal. Like, we're for sure the most extreme company in the space. Like, I mean, we're like we said, unapologetically maximalist.
Maybe like Rodolfo's the only one who gives
Rodolfo. Yeah. He's I love Rodolfo. I think that all we're doing is we're taking, you know, the far side of the spectrum to help shift the normies into a reasonable level of Bitcoin maximalism. I think there's, you know, like, okay, just myself and Francis sitting here, like, I would say, like, Francis is one of the more extreme people that I've met, but I appreciate that because it keeps the narrative on a path of, like, you know, you get to a Bitcoin-only conference and, you know, there's some extreme maximalism, which actually, you know what, I found here at the event that everybody's been super nice and super inviting and the conversations have been great. But having that sentiment in the room, it takes the people that would have been pumping bullshit and it brings them into the conversation as a, you know what, like, yeah, you know, Bitcoin is important and like and they're very cautious to like try and pump bullshit. And I think when we you know are unforgiving in the way that we approach this, again, we drive that narrative into the realm where it's just not okay to be pumping outright scams. And we've seen kind of this shift. I'm sure it'll migrate back with another crazy pump. There's going to be bullshit coming in the next major bull market, but I think it's important that we just shift those goalposts a little bit so that people can't be as blatant with what they're trying to scam people with.
Yeah, and this harpens back to earlier on the conversation with narratives, and that's something that Matt and I talk about a lot, is like we're trying to normalize coin joining. Like, this should be a good thing. Like, you should have financial privacy. You should not feel dirty when you're coin joining your coins. Like,
yeah, totally.
Just making it socially palatable is important. Like, when we're crafting these narratives, like, it is not a bad thing to want financial privacy.
Yeah, no, and like, you know, one of the reasons I'm doing that is because I'm good at it, right? I mean, I studied it. I worked professionally in Bitcoin before, condensing complex ideas into things that kind of resonate with people. And, you know, since I like kind of made a conscious decision to really up the rhetoric and like quit. Like, also, I can. I don't have a boss, right? So I can. Not only that, but my business partners think that, you know, my radical humor is fucking hilarious. And you know, my friends think it's super funny. And everybody around me that I care about, they don't give me shit, right? They see what I'm doing. They get what I'm doing. But it does feel strange and weird to have that effect on people, in the sense that, to me, like, again, when I tweet, when I say things, I do it very consciously, knowing that I'm influencing people. I'm very careful with the way that I say things, for example. But I'm still kind of super surprised. When I joined the Bitcoin Embassy in the first time, you notice I didn't name any one of the founders. It's because I rarely do. It's because these guys, they told me, hey, we'll take you in. We met through libertarian circles, and they said, okay, we'll take you in. We'll teach you everything we know about Bitcoin. We'll get you in the Bitcoin space, but you're going to be the public face and you're going to be the one who talks. And your job is to have the responsibility of being that face. And like, I just started doing it and, you know, I can't really go back. But the thing is, I get a huge amount of love also. Like, a huge, I'm so every time shocked when people, they come to me and they like, they always say like, I learned so much because of you. I changed my mind because of you. I quit my job. I did this. I did that. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, this is awesome. Like, I'm having a huge ripple effect on all sorts of other people. And the criticism and the bullshit, like, I, you know, I always imagined when I was younger, I was very romantic in the French literary sense, like enamored with the resistance and the French Revolution.
Yeah, you recently posted a picture of you when you were younger, like in a leather jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
Giving the finger to someone. Yeah. What was that?
I think that was me in Berlin at the fall of the wall of Berlin. Mm-hmm. And I've always been kind of, Bitcoin is just the best cause, right? It's just like, it's the best thing to dedicate yourself fully to. And like, I feel very good about myself. I sleep like a baby. I don't feel like I'm scamming anyone. I feel like I'm doing the right thing. And I feel, you know, I'm very, very content. And the Twitter rhetoric, I think, shows people that, like, it's kind of, you know, I hope people see it as someone standing up and being like, you know, fuck this. Like, let's just real talk. Like, Bitcoin is too important. This is not a game. We're not here to make friends. We're here to, like,
change the world.
Change the world, and like, your feelings matter not at all to me.
Right, right. No, and it's something we harp on a lot here too. Is like, Bitcoin's provided this common mission for people to sort of gather around and make happen in a very disparate, decentralized way, and it's fucking beautiful in my opinion. Yep. Like, it's given me purpose. That's why we do this podcast. That's why I write every day. Like, it feels good to wake up. Like you said, I sleep like a baby as well. And
yeah, totally.
Be invigorated every day around a common cause that so many like-minded people have dedicated their lives to as well.
And like most of the, you know, most of the builders of Bitcoin, guys that I like that I've met, all of us, most of them, they think of like building cathedrals that last for like hundreds of years, right? Like thousands of years. Like, I always have this joke where I'm saying, like, I want to have, like, statues of me from my grateful descendants, which are now, like, barons that own Australia or something. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking, like, eight generations down where there's going to be, like, paintings of me on the wall, like the Medicis or something.
The seven-generation mindset. You got
to
have
and
that.
I'm half joking in a way, right? I think a lot of people that are building Bitcoin are starting to really extend their... And it's something that we haven't seen since, like... There's two other things that do that to people. There is religion and climate change, right? These are the two other things out there that get people to really think like extremely long term and to like try to see the effect of their life in a cross generational span and be mindful of that. But Bitcoin is the third one, you know. And I'm not a religious person. I don't care about religion. Climate change, not the biggest fan of the climate change religion. But Bitcoin is that other one that, and if you're an adventurer, if you're a fucking rebel, what are you going to do? Like, all the vices have been, you know, we can't even buy vapes, e-cigs in San Francisco. If you're a rebel, what are you going to do? You're going to build on Bitcoin, right? If you want to explore like space, well, you can't. And the oceans are like boring. So like, the oceans are amazing, but you know, you're going to explore Bitcoin, right? The next frontier. So yeah, it's just the best ride. I don't know why it's the new Far West, right? It's the new Wild West. And the way that I see it is like, I'm going there. And you know, some people there, they discovered it, and some people landscaped, you know, did the maps. And I'm coming in, and I'm building a railway, and I'm building a general store, and I'm getting that prime real estate. And like, anybody can do that. Like, all you have to do is pick up your bags, go west, and just like, don't get killed.
Exactly. No, and it's Bitcoin's very punk rock. That's why I like to learn that you're into skateboarding growing up. Like, I've talked about this as well. Bitcoin reminds me a lot about skateboarding. It's just rebels trying to figure out new ways to make something
and
happen.
Using their energy in a constructive way, because like Bitcoin, people in Bitcoin, even the craziest toxic Bitcoin anonymous accounts on Twitter that I've talked to in person and stuff like that, like they're actually like very positive minded people, like extremely, like they clearly have a lot of energy and maybe some testosterone or some they are contrarians. They're people that are conflictual, maybe, but they are all driven by a very positive thing instead of, you know, destroying people's lives or killing people or creating wars or like, these are people that are dedicated truly to something that's positive, regardless of their personalities.
Yeah. And the toxicity is quote unquote toxicity. I don't think it's toxic at all, but it's a defense mechanism to make sure we don't fuck this up.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And, you know, toxic to me is like maximalist. You know, you call me toxic, you know, fuck it. I'll reclaim that word.
Right.
Because I identify with it. I think of toxic. I think of guys like Giacomo. I think of my other Twitter friends that I've known for a long time. You know, I put the Toxic logo in my handle. And I mean, screw it. Like, if this is how you want to paint us, do it at your own detriment. And the people that identify in such a way now have something to rally around, which is funny and which offends people. And I'm perfectly fine with that.
We actually took out a full page ad in Bitcoin Magazine when they started doing the new issue. And so at the bottom of the ad, it says follow the toxicity. And there's like the Twitter handles of everybody involved in Bull Bitcoin there. And it's pretty solid. It's funny.
Oh, and there's a funny backstory I can share with you guys. We actually submitted no shitcoins on our ad, but the Bitcoin Magazine review board said that's not appropriate. So we changed it to no honk coins. Not knowing that there's like a honk Pepe thing.
What?
Because honk for us was just like a clown nose, like, you know, when you like censor someone with like a clown thing. And then that exact day, Facebook banned honk from their site. So we're like, we just got in, like, and it's there forever. If honk ever becomes, maybe in like 50 years, I'd be like, oh, it was like using the N-word back in the 20s. These guys were socially backward. I don't know, but it's in there. And we also love Bitcoin Magazine. I think just generally, people listening were at the Bitcoin 2019 conference, obviously, and I've been. Like following them and friends with them for a really long time. At the Bitcoin Embassy, we were distributing Why Bitcoin Magazine, which they sent us for free. I think thousands of copies for us to hand out. I don't know if you guys remember Why Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And
right, that was BTC Media as well.
Yeah, that was Dave Bailey and then Bitcoin Magazine. And I talked to them, a few of their team for a while, and I really saw the Bitcoin-only transformation. And they announced they were going Bitcoin only, like I think a week after or a week before we announced the Bitcoin only exchange. And it is a genuine, true shift that they're bringing, which is like, let's take it back home. And I'm really excited to see what they're going to be building. I think they are putting a lot of resources into, and they are one of the institutions around which the Bitcoin narrative revolves. And we're incredibly lucky that we ended up with these like really good people in different businesses and different sectors that are just holding the fort so well and that are really creating a big gravitational pull around them. It really speaks a lot to the Bitcoin project, just the quality of the people that are like dedicated to it.
Yeah, let's give a quick shout out to Aaron Van Weerdem, who's been
holding. Oh yeah, Aaron also, I've been following his work for a long time, and he's definitely, we're lucky to have him.
We are very lucky. His technical details of Bitcoin Magazine throughout the years have been incredible. His documenting of the fork wars, explaining SegWit, whatever it may be. How to dump your Bcash.
Totally. And what's great about him is his articles are like evergreen. Like if you read his old stuff, it's still good. It's still super amazing. We need people like that to. And actually, we need to remember our history as well. And we need to carry the history forward. One thing that I've noticed is not a lot of people were around in UASF times.
Right.
I didn't realize how many new Bitcoiners there are until I feel like an old guy. Like, you remember USF? Like, well, I've heard about it on Twitter, but no. And I'm like, oh, shit, you weren't there? Like, you missed a massive show.
No, but a lot of people that were there, too, were just completely oblivious to it. Like, I talked to people who came into the space, you know, a year, 2 years before, and they just had no idea. They didn't even realize it was
going on. What a fun time to be on Twitter that summer was.
Oh, my God, that was brutal.
Right.
A few of the Twitter of USF guys, like, we spent like, man, like 4 or 5 months almost entirely dedicated to that. It was just nonstop flying to every other place, like behind the scenes. Like, it was super, it was a lot of effort because the SegWit2x, the Gavin, the MyCurrent,
BIP148, BIP91, all that shit.
Garzik camp, they were really active, and we hang out at the same conferences, so we could see them being extremely active, taking people away. So we just had to, and then Twitter became the like that started the whole idea of the Twitter signaling, the idea of putting your Lightning. That was after UASF was done. I was like, a few of the people like, what do we put in our handles now? Let's put a Lightning
something.
Sign. Yeah, we need something. And now I put the Toxic sign, no 2x. And what it did was it provided evidence of a few things, and it also made us all learn about how Bitcoin works. But one of them was the miners don't decide the rules. There is no such thing as democracy. now that seems like a very ingrained idea that if you ask like a Bitcoin expert or someone that's like us that's really into this, like, is Bitcoin a democracy where miners vote? 95% of people will say no, that's not the Bitcoin consensus. But at that time, maybe people do, I don't know, but not in my circles. And at that time, it was a very contested issue. Is Bitcoin a democracy or not? And I was like, no fucking way, I'm getting another. I just left democracy in order to change how things are run. I don't want a new democracy. And with 90% of the hash power going for SegWit 2x, and half of the businesses of transaction volume going for SegWit 2x and getting wrecked by the economic reality of Bitcoin, it's like, if we have the insiders that are trying to wreck this thing and that can't, and it's not easy to like screw with Bitcoin. Like, there was a lot of hardcore schemes with Bitmain at that time, and you know, funding BitPay and like funding other projects and getting people to like sign mutual like defense agreements against other it was like super intense. And that whole like scheming, I think, is done. Like, it's not gonna happen again. So that was like that was one of the things that made me super bullish on Bitcoin. UASF, not that much, but SegWit 2x, I'm like, there's no way that any coin ever other than Bitcoin could have resisted that ever.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
I remember I interviewed you twice during, like, before we worked together, before anything. I interviewed you twice leading up to this. The first one, it was like it's your quote was, it's over, we won. And that was like with the activation of UASF, like we got SegWit and everything. And then we were talking in September of 2017, and you basically called the outcome of what was going to happen a couple months down the road when 2x failed. You basically said preemptively, like, they're gonna back out, like, this, it's gonna fail, it's probably not even gonna run, and like all of that shit happened. And for me personally, like, I was learning about the stuff, and I mean, I always am constantly trying to learn and take it in. But for me, that realization, when was it, like 24 hours before they backed out of 2x?
Yeah, the one off bug.
Single letter.
Yeah, the single letter, like the some low key email. Like, yeah.
No,
yo.
No, the one off bug was later because it wouldn't have actually implemented anyway. But like the main signers sent out like an email blog post where they were like, we're not doing it.
It was very dry, and but like,
and they didn't apologize. There was no apology or anything.
Today was a great opportunity to apologize for Eric Voorhees. He's a good guy, but I think he should have just said, yeah, I was wrong. Like, it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to be wrong. But I think why I was so confident was I met a lot of the USF advocates and like a lot of the companies that we talked to and that were kind of on our side. And we were definitely outnumbered and definitely, most definitely outgunned, ridiculously outgunned. And but we had the resolve that they didn't have.
The intolerant minority, baby.
Exactly. That's it. And it's just before that time, I think, that I read Skin in the Game. And I read Antifragile before, and I had read his article before it came out in the book. And I just completely, it's the way that I saw it was, it was a game of chicken, and we were like rednecks, like downing bottles of vodka, like shooting in the air, ready to die.
Moonshine.
Versus like Jihan and the other business, like Silicon Valley business leaders, like in their little suits and little, you know, of course they're going to swerve out of the way. They didn't believe in it as much as we did, because a lot of them, for them, Bitcoin, again, it's just a market. It could have been AI, but it was Bitcoin.
By the time it happened, they had like nothing to gain, and they had like everything to lose. Like all the incentives just stacked completely in favor of not changing.
Yeah, totally.
I was going to say, in that event in particular, like that we got SegWit, SegWit 2x did not happen. I think that signals to the greater public too, like, this is not what we're used to. Corporations are not going to come in and run this system. Like, it is truly a system for the people.
That honestly was like my moment in Bitcoin where I was like, well, this is, nobody can fuck with Bitcoin. Like, right. I saw that happen. I was like, are you kidding me? Imagine any other industry where every industry leader, every major company gets together and says, yeah, we're changing this shit. And people are like, nah, nah, fam. Not going
to
happen.
Pumped to 20K right afterwards. Yeah.
And they were definitely correlated.
I think so as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like when I told people to buy three times in my life, when Bear Whale got destroyed, when SegWit got activated, and just at the end of this year, when I just could not see more Bitcoins being sold anywhere, like from an OTC standpoint, it was like super dried up. It was like people are just refusing to sell now. And because the activation of SegWit was like the last barrier to convincing people, like that the fact that the idea that miners are in control of Bitcoin was a huge problem for a lot of people, because they saw it as China, a Chinese coin, that was going to serve the, and it was a big problem for many, many people. And then we were like, no, and the idea now is that we can scale socially because we don't have to worry about these things, because people will never agree on anything. There's no sense in trying. We've seen that on a doubling of the block size, we could not agree to a point where people are calling this a civil war. So forget the idea of going to governing Bitcoin. Forget the idea that there's any centralization and that you're going to make it happen with your very nice governance scheme with balanced incentives that you're going to impose on us or whatever. These trade-offs that are negotiated by, you know, responsible business people or whatever they think they're doing. And then we can focus on other things. Right? And Bitcoiners should not have to think that much about Bitcoin. We're thinking about Bitcoin now because we're like in the bootstrap industry, but like in 20 years, there should be no Bitcoin community. There should be like Bitcoin IT experts and Bitcoin economists and whatever. And if we have to scale Bitcoin, like we have to, the idea of following on social media in order to be aware of what's going on needs to go away. And this was my ultimate argument for backwards incompatible hard forks. Is that if some guy that bought Bitcoin in 2012 wants to use bills, he syncs up his Bitcoin node and he sends his money to me, it must work.
You got to think about the man in the coma.
It's absolutely important, right? And when the Segwit2x people were talking about the users and how they represent the users, I'm like, when's the last time you've spent a day with one of your users? Like, don't bullshit me. Like, you don't know what the users are. And the users will not upgrade to your fork. The users will lose coins when this happens. And they will be super disappointed. And then I will never look at someone in the eye and tell them that I'm in a new Bitcoin with different rules and his Bitcoin are not valid anymore. Like, I will never do that.
Right. And thank you for that. And this has been a great conversation. We're an hour, 5 minutes in. I think this is a great Segwit2x history episode.
It was cool. A very good episode. I'm just extremely bullish right now.
I am so bullish. It's unreal. Like,
bullish with bull Bitcoin.
I didn't want to be bullish. I really didn't. I'm begrudgingly bullish.
I'm just always bullish, but now I'm extra bullish.
And this is a comment that so many Bitcoiners have been telling me over the last few days, is I really thought I had more time.
It always catches you off guard, no matter what. It doesn't matter how long you've been here.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. Before we part here, do you guys have any parting notes about what you're working on? Any messages you want to send the freaks out there?
Oh, one thing. So Bull Bitcoin is Canada only. So unfortunately, Bills and Bull Bitcoin, all you non-Canadian users, you can't use us. But we also just launched a art store and a merch store where we're selling some gear. We're adding unique items like every couple of weeks. So we have an artist that's putting some cool stuff out there. So if you want to, you know, see some merch, some Bitcoin art.
Are Americans allowed to buy merch?
Oh, they are. They most definitely are. And a few of them have bought it.
End of the free. Yeah.
And I will say that any of the trolls out there that tell us like we're toxic or whatever, it just gives us more fodder to like create new merch. Like I was telling you guys before we started, but some dude was calling one of our designs Satanist, and so our artist was like, "Oh, you're gonna love the next design," and did like a quick like paper napkin like design of like, you know, like some goat head, and like, so that's coming. So, you know, the trolls out there, Keep it going, because it gives us great ideas.
Keep feeding the bull. Yes. Keep feeding the bull Bitcoin.
Yeah, cut the bullshit.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. It's been an incredible conversation.
All right, thanks, guys.
Love you.
Cheers.
Peace and love.
Bye. Okay.